It's Helping Hand, weekly feature, HPR 1 stations statewide every Friday afternoon. Helping Hand puts a spotlight on an organization, event, topic that offers assistance to the disabled and other folks who are among the most vulnerable in our community. Aloha, I'm Dave Lawrence. This week we're learning about Helping Hands Hawaii. According to their website, they evolved from the establishment of the Honolulu Council of Social Agencies Volunteer Placement Bureau quite a few years ago, and with a mission to connect individuals, families, organizations with essential human and material resources. They have a program we're going to hear about today. It's called Ready to Learn. Maybe you've heard about it. It helps Hawaii's less fortunate children, I've been told, get the tools that they need to succeed in the classroom. Through July 15th, donations of $10 fills a backpack with basic school supplies in this endeavor. Donations being accepted at any American Savings branch, and we'll find out if there's more ways that you can help with that program as we welcome our very special guest joining us here at HPR today, Jan Harada, President and Chief Executive Officer of Helping Hands Hawaii. Aloha, Jan. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dave.
And I did all that. Actually, it's going to run in the middle of the afternoon, so just recut it. Just you say hi, anything.
Hi.
Good to have you here. And before we get into the Ready to Learn program, which I'm excited to feature because it sounds like a great way to help out folks, Helping Hands Hawaii, name similar to the feature that we've got here. Tell us a little bit about who the organization views as the primary folks that you're out there trying to assist.
Well, the primary folks we're helping are folks that are struggling with poverty or homelessness, everyone from 0 to 90 plus, folks who are individuals and folks who are families with children, and then elderly that are living alone. So that's the bulk of who we help. We also do a lot of work with the mentally ill, folks who are struggling with addiction, and then also immigrants with limited English proficiency.
You guys are right up our alley. What got you involved? How long have you been involved in the organization, and what drew you to them?
So I've been at Helping Hands Hawaii since July 2010. I've been in the nonprofit sector for about 8 years. I'm actually licensed to practice law. I'm a member of the bar, but I just I'm driven to want to help people in need and do that through a life of service. So this fits nicely into sort of my life purpose.
And that background, what sort of law is your background in?
I never practiced. Okay. I took the bar, passed the bar, and then just decided I wasn't going to practice law.
It's still a great skill. I see how that lends itself. Kind of like in radio, you know, you don't really want to go to school for broadcasting. It's better if you have something like that you know, and then you can bring that to the broadcasting
yes.
place. And I see I see a similar thing there because no doubt the thing about helping folks in need, a lot of the times it takes muscle.
Yes.
And the law is the muscle in our civilized society. So I admire you for being able to tap that and see that provides a lot of insight into how you can be more effective. Before we get to Ready to Learn, what are some of your efforts regarding, you described some of the most important situations in the community, homelessness, obviously an epidemic that could eventually turn this place into an undesirable tourist destination if they don't begin to tackle it. When we think about all the different areas that you touched on before we get to Ready to Learn, I just want to paint a picture of some of the efforts you guys are involved in tackling these crises.
So one of the areas that we're reaching, looking at homelessness, for example, is a Hawaii Pathways Project partnership with Catholic Charities Hawaii. It's part of the whole state and city and county housing first effort. We provide the services component on a wraparound 24/7 basis, targeting chronically homeless individuals who are struggling with addiction or addiction with mental illness.
Do you guys have a shelter or do you partner with an agency?
No, we partner. We get the funds for the actual housing units. These are all people being placed into permanent market rate units. So we partner with the state housing first effort, the city housing first effort, and then a number of other areas to place them in individual units in the community.
And you mentioned elderly as well. What are some of the things that you guys do with
it? So our community clearinghouse, which is a donation warehouse that folks can come to and get access to basic necessities on a regular basis for free on an appointment basis. We partner with many different organizations who refer their clients to us. That particular program, and also our SNAP, which is used to be food stamps, now supplemental nutrition assistance. We're the statewide coordinator and we do the outreach on Oahu. So those are probably the two primary programs that really reach the elderly in particular. Example, we have a woman who used to come into the Clearinghouse on a monthly basis because you can come once a month to get new shorts because she was taking care of her elderly father who soiled himself all the time. So they always constantly needed clothing and they couldn't afford to get new clothing. So they'd come to our warehouse for that. And then the SNAP program, many of the folks, contrary to the stereotype, many of the folks who need SNAP benefits are the elderly who are homebound or living on limited income and can't afford basic food necessities.
That's a good point that you mentioned because, and you'll help inform me a little better on it. My perception is that Hawaii has an extraordinarily high percentage of folks who are using these services.
Yeah. Yes. There's probably more that are eligible that aren't currently getting for a number of reasons. Some of them don't want to. Some of them feel embarrassed. I mean, so it's sort of that stigma associated with accessing benefits, even if you really need it. And part of the struggle is getting them to be beyond that.
That is a really powerful thing. And I think that might hold true with a lot of the different services and organizations I feature on here because, I mean, that's an angle I sometimes forget about is... you don't want to feel like you need something like that. Mm-hmm. Those are tough moments because you might not take it. You might not help yourself because it's because pride, mm-hmm. which affects so many decisions mm-hmm. in your life. That's a really important one. And the same, I can see that with a lot of elderly folks, particularly because they just feel awkward that they're asking for that. Is that a larger, forgive me for not remembering how you broke it down, but is that the larger percentage of who's using that service?
Not necessarily, but there's a significant percentage. And then the other significant percentage is children, families with children.
And children. It's a great note before we slide into Ready to Learn. Something else, just one little bridge under the children's note. The Talia Williams case has made such a huge mark on the islands. Recently, thankfully, legislators trying to put some fiber behind that horrible experience and make it so that it won't happen again. Did what happened to her and does the issue of child abuse, how much does that play into the services that you guys are dealing with?
We see families who are struggling with that issue many times in our holiday, our adoptive family program that we run during the holidays. Many times families that ask for holiday assistance are families that are single parent households or ones struggling with domestic violence or other issues in that house related to the children or spouse or others. We also do some work with child welfare through our bilingual access line. Our interpreters are available and do some appointments with folks that need language interpreting. And what we see with that is sometimes for that cases that are happening in families that don't speak English, it's very hard. And culturally, you have to be very sensitive to the issues associated with addressing that issue in certain communities.
And that really is something, because every community does do things different. And that's just beyond the islands. That would be anywhere, because I'm sure there'd be some vast differences. Let's just say, for example, in an extremely rural town in Georgia versus mm-hmm. in downtown Boston, you mm-hmm. know. So
yeah, we see that a lot, especially with our language interpreters. We do emergency financial assistance, so not specifically related to child abuse, but that's the thing about being afraid to sort of ask for help. You know, we get the folks who are either at imminent risk of homelessness or trying to transition out of homelessness that are asking for help with rent or utilities.
So that's what the help is for. So the finances mm-hmm. is to keep the house, to mm-hmm. keep you in a house.
To keep you housed, yeah, or your power on or your water running or your gas running.
And what would make someone eligible or not eligible for
this? Well, they have to have emergency or crisis situation and they have to be able to show either they can be self-sufficient in the future or they're working towards that. Because our whole thing is we don't want to just give assistance and then have you come back a month later because you're still in the same situation. How do we help you get beyond that so you don't not keep coming back? Financial literacy and education we do budget analysis, case management, looking at everything. So it's a range. But we get the folks sometimes, again, they'll wait till the last minute, the power's about to get shut off the next day, and then they call us. And so we can't turn it around that fast, but what we can do is talk to utility companies and say, hey, they've come to us, we're not guaranteeing we can help them yet, but you know, please don't shut their power off. And eligibility is also, so we get the calls too, the weird calls would be like, I went to Vegas and lost all my money and now I can't afford my rent. Well, that doesn't qualify, you know, so it has to be some sort of emergency or crisis or unexpected situation. In most cases, it's extended unemployment. It's a medical emergency. that is huge medical costs, or death in the family of an income earner. Those are the three most common reasons why people come to us.
And they're on the edge of homelessness.
Yes. And you'd be surprised how many people in Hawaii, the percentage of folks who are spending way more than 30%, which is the suggested range for people of your household income on your housing, which is purely the roof over your head and your utilities. So you're not even talking food or phone or anything yet. But the suggested range is 30%. And there's way more people in Hawaii that are spending more than 30%, closer to 50%.
Of your monthly income.
Of your monthly income on your housing.
I thought it was 50, but maybe...
Is 30 that, is the range. Is
for all of us, like
for all of
nationwide?
Us, all of us. 30% wow. is the suggested, the rational. But most of us aren't, especially in Hawaii, with affordability being such a huge issue.
No way.
Yeah, so all those folks you think are paycheck to paycheck, literally.
Yeah, and I do. I have some awareness of that. I mean, I'm even more frightened hearing the 30% thing. I don't fall into that. But I am aware of the... and that's one of the things before we get into Ready to Learn. I think it's like the homeless thing is such a crisis because people have no idea about it. And it is not... people use it like a word. It's almost like, ooh, homeless. You know, they don't... homelessness, it's like the word drug. It comes in so many shades, so many flavors. There's so many ways someone is dealing with it. There's so many situations. They could be homeless and working. They could be homeless with kids. They could be homeless with psychological disabilities. They could, you know, substance abuse. There's so many issues, you know, and a lot of the time people just don't want to deal with it. You know, they just don't want to see it, you know, and it provokes a lot in your mind because you're like, wait a minute, you don't want to see it. What are we doing with the homeless? You're trying to round them up, what, so we don't see them? Is that what it is? Move them from place to place so that no one sees them? Because what? So you can make more money with people coming here and spending a fortune on overpriced stuff? That, you know, and it's just like you start to realize, you know, that issue to me evokes so many ranges of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, so yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people, getting back to your point, they're about to be homeless.
Yes. Yeah. The prevention piece is huge.
Yeah. And you can't really see. So how would they fit into your little stigma? You know, it's your neighbor. That's your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not, they're not like some, you know, it's not one size fits. You know, it's a phrase we use often on this, you know, because we talk about homeless a lot on this segment. And we learn a lot because there's a lot of different angles to it, you know, and that's why I'm real pleased to, because I knew you guys tackled a lot more than just this, this admirable program that you've got, which we will now talk about.
Yeah.
Ready to Learn, it's called. And because it's really, you know, you start with the kids. If you can't help them, you know, if they're in crisis then and you don't put the rescue boat out, these other things we're talking about are for sure going to be having to be dealt with, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, really important. And I, not having kids, it took doing this segment. I started to learn a lot about what would happen if your start was so rough, you know, what might happen and the odds. And, so, this program, it's Ready to Learn, and it's about helping children get school supplies for the upcoming school year. What I haven't described, fill in.
Well, it is school supplies for, again, children that are living in households that are either low income or homeless. Basic school supplies, you know, we buy it at a discounted rate so we can spread the monies out further. You know, what we've noticed is that simple act of going to school with proper school supplies is huge from a motivation standpoint and a morale standpoint internally for these kids. It's that shame factor again, you know, so little you can do to help them get a good start to the school year. And the program actually runs all year. The big push is before the school year starts, but kids run out, right? And many times you look at the public school list now, the classroom list of supplies has gotten larger and larger and longer throughout the years. And it's starting to reflect the nature of some of the own budgetary challenges of the DOE. So classroom supplies are showing up on those lists too, whether you're talking boxes of Kleenex or hand sanitizer or paper towels or Ziploc bags.
Kids are supposed to bring this.
Yeah, this is all on their list. And so, you know, if we can help with the little things like notes, notebooks and pencils and, you know, scissors and glue and crayons and things that all of us that might not be struggling as much might think, oh, you can go get that from wherever for a discounted price. For families that we're helping, that's huge because they have to choose food and shelter and then before they even look at something like school supplies.
How do you identify these families? Who you're going to help?
So we partner with this year probably over 80 to close to 100 organizations or community entities that work, and that's our gives us broad reach, works with the same population groups in terms of income. And then they refer folks to us that need this assistance. And then we then go out, purchase or collect school supplies through donation drives, through our work with American Savings Bank, that kind of thing, to collect it. And then we distribute it back out through our networks. So that's one of our strengths, collaboration.
Right. I was going to say, so your partners vet who these really needy children are, and then you come up with the supplies.
Yes. So the thing, the strength of the program is that's the collaboration piece. And then on the other side, we depend heavily on our partners that help us with the funding and donation drives, monetary donations and actual school supplies. So, you know, American Savings Bank is a brand new partner this year. They have 56 branches statewide. And so to have them come on board allows us to do statewide reach because the branches on all the islands are collecting at their branches and all of what's collected on those islands will stay on those islands.
I get it. It turns your effort into sort of like an octopus with tentacles at every one of these branches. And so you walk in with 10 bucks, you turn it over at this branch. You're out of there, and you've just contributed.
Yeah, I mean, it's really great to have them come on board. They've been really energetic, and so it's really cool.
But that's how it works.
Yep.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
All right. And back to kids who are without a home. So, I mean, are some of these supplies for kids in shelters?
Yes.
And there are quite a few children.
Yes.
I mean, that's another part, as you know, my little rant that I had earlier. I mean, people don't, you know, these are kids.
Yes.
They're minors. They're like Talia Williams. They're innocent. They had no choice.
Yeah.
They didn't make a choice. They ended up in this situation.
Yeah, and I think for kids to have a good, successful educational career, at least K through 12, it takes many things. So this is one part of the whole continuum that's needed, is helping them have the right tools, so to speak, to, you know, best use their educational experience. I mean, it's just one part of the whole network.
And when you point out, you know, the example, oh, all they need school supplies, you can just go around the corner and get that. Well, not when you're in a shelter.
Yeah, not when you're in a shelter or, you know, sometimes in small rural communities, you know, you got to think about, okay, how do I do that? Do I drive to town?
Right.
Well, okay, gas is going to be X amount, or I guess I could catch the bus, but then how do I carry all the supplies back on the bus? I mean, it's...
Where you are does matter. That's a very
geography makes a huge difference.
Right, especially because you have a statewide pull like you're talking about, and a lot of the people who are in need may not be right in the big city.
Right.
I had a list of supplies too. Would you rather have the cash or the I have, you know, the 24 count crayons, the backpacks, the notebooks, specific stuff? How are you doing this? Do you want the supplies or you just want the money?
I think the supplies are good if you stick to the exact. I think the money is easier because it allows us to just buy in bulk what's needed. Sometimes when people bring miscellaneous supplies, it's great and we can use it. But that usually then is the stuff that gets distributed throughout the school year and not at the beginning.
Okay.
Because to be fair, when we serve
identical
5,000 to 8,000 kids, you know, if somebody brings some great calculators that are fancy, but I only got 50, I can't give 50 to 50 kids and not give to the other 8,000.
Yeah, they all have to have the same sort of package.
So that's why the money is easier. But we'll take supplies, too, because it always will get used. So
I'll put the supplies on our website. 24-count crayons, backpacks, composition books, 4-ounce containers of glue, 4.5-inch scissors, portfolios, one subject spiral notebooks, folder paper, college or wide rule, ballpoint pens, black or blue rulers. So I'll include that. And then if you have more items that you wanted, email me before the segment and I'll get them in there.
The easiest way to do that through donations is either to go to one of the American Savings Bank branches. All the branches are collecting and they're also collecting monetary donations. There's 4 fantastic Sam's locations on the island that's on our website you'll find that are collecting as well. And you can get a little coupon for a discount at Fantastic Sam's at those 4 locations. And then, you know, if you're a company and you want to donate and you want to do your own drive, like Dietrich is going to do their own internal employee drive. So there's different ways you can support it.
That's a great thing. So in addition, just on the donation, because you rolled it in there kind of quick, that's all at the American Savings Bank locations. Are there other places you can make the donation besides online?
So you can go to, there's 4 Fantastic Sam's locations. I don't have that off the top of my head, but on our website, you'll see all the 4 locations on Oahu. And those are the main ones.
The main portals.
Yes.
And at the website, too.
I mean, you can go to our community clearinghouse, come to our main facility and donate then, too.
Where is that?
At Nimitz, 2100 North Nimitz.
Here in the Honolulu area. Yes. And then in addition to the school supplies, are there ways that you're looking for anyone to volunteer?
Always use volunteers. So,
what are some ideas?
You know, I mean, I think we've had volunteers come in and help us sort school supplies that are starting to come in and package them for all the kids that are going to get distributed to help with our clearinghouse operations. We're always looking for also folks who know how to do sort of facility general contracting type of work. So, you know, we own our facility, but that also means we're responsible for upkeep. So whether it's painters or flooring guys or, you know, plumbers or whatever it is that want to donate time to help us with some of the facility stuff.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's very tangible. Other skilled labor you need? I mean, you already have, thankfully, a law background, but do you need more legal, accounting, anything like that that you want to throw out there?
I think we can always use folks that are interested in helping us with PR and marketing and communications.
Fantastic. Yeah. HelpingHandsHawaii.org is the website where you can not only learn about some of the supplies they need or some of the programs that they offer to help folks with, but you can make a $10 donation right there, which will fill one child's
mm-hmm.
backpack.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool. I have also, you mentioned a great thing about businesses that could think, wow, this is a cool thing we could do, and it could rally. It could be a internal community kind of vibration at your business that you're doing this, you know. So I just throw that out there to give people, you know, and it's kind of could be a cool thing, could be a unifier at work. And 5367234, a great way to call you guys and say, hey, we have a business we want to.
Yeah, that's the main line. If they want to participate in Ready to Learn, they would call 440-3812.
3812
for ready to learn specifically. Yes.
Fantastic. I'll make sure I have that on the website too. And then for folks who want to email, hhh@helpinghandshawaii.org.
Yes.
And that way you can, if you have an idea, maybe you have a question, maybe there's a way that you think your company could help out, but you just want to clarify. And at HawaiiPublicRadio.org, I've got the full interview, your radio feature, all of your contact information, your list of what we're looking for the backpacks for the kids. And no doubt you're doing a whole lot of good things. First of all, when there's another thing that's coming on, reach out to me. I'd love to have you back on the program.
Do whatever I can
to support you. It sounds like there's a lot of great things you're doing, especially as you dig more into the homeless thing, elderly who are in trouble, kids who are getting beaten on. Mm-hmm. I hope that you'll call and email.
That'd be great.
I'd love to support what you're doing. And second of all, because there may be something we didn't cover today, and I'd love to get it in the feature. If you feel like, wow, he never asked about or I wanted to mention, please add it now, because I want to make sure that this thing has as much teeth as we can give it.
Well, I think on homelessness, it really is going to take all of us. So it's not one organization that can do it all. It's going to take the whole services sector. And then in addition to that, it's not just government that needs to be a part of it. It's community, it's neighbors, it's businesses, it's entities. They all have to be a part of the solution. You know, collaboration is super important. I think one of the biggest barriers is our systems issues or process issues or people issues, not including the resource issues we have, you know, but just people needing to be able to come to the table and work together and engage even when you're disagreeing and not sort of immediately, you know, discount somebody's opinion, but understand that everybody has a voice, no matter what position you're in, no matter what title you have, and sort of be open to out-of-the-box thinking about how we can address this issue as a community. It's going to take everybody.
You think continuously moving them from one place to another is effective at all?
I don't think it's effective without a place for them to go.
A destination?
Yes. So I think it you know, you got to address the concerns of businesses, because that's, you got to address that. You can't have folks who are impacting businesses. Mm-hmm. So they can't be urinating or defecating or sleeping on the sidewalk, you know, blocking a business. But at the same time, if you're going to move them, you have to have a place for them to go. You have to have a plan for how to help address the fact that they're on the street. And that's the piece that I think people are trying to work on and trying to develop. It's just, they don't have it yet.
And there are so many, every single person has to be addressed as an individual, because the situation is unique.
The needs are, everybody's different.
It's like a key.
Yeah, everybody's different. I mean, the folks that we see, everybody's got a different story. And it's actually making it so they're not invisible. So really sort of trying to pay attention to their story.
That's a key part of it. And that's what I guess what I was saying. You know, sometimes people think, oh, they're homeless. You know, and that's a person like you. Because we're all identical, you know, if you were born in Bangladesh or you were born in Delaware, got news for you. There's just not a real huge difference. And it's like the more we carve each other up, the more I see these problems continue to fester. It's just like, that's a person, you know, it becomes harder and harder for me to see them, because my walk to and from work, it is impossible to come from Waikiki to here and back without seeing a number of people in distress.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and every one of them has a story.
Exactly right. They are people in distress. It's like I don't look at it like a whole bunch of homeless people. I look at it as each one of these people, and it just it takes you down a few notches. By the time you get to work, you're like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't, I moved to Hawaii. This is, I don't think people in the mainland understood where I moved. You know, they might run if they saw this is the walk to work, you know, because I feel for these cats, you know. And like you pointed out about the rent, you're not necessarily in a position to solve it because it's going to take a collaboration because with the rent so high, even the person with the biggest heart can't necessarily solve it or they're going to be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's, I don't know how to deal with it. I'm looking forward to talking to you again. I'm grateful that the people in need have somebody with a legal background. I really am. Jan Harada, President, CEO, Helping Hands Hawaii, on Helping Hand.
Yes, that's great.
Thanks for doing what you do and for being here today.
Thank you for having me.